My name's Joe, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's March 21st, 1975. My home group is Primary Purpose Group in Raleigh, Tennessee. I'd like to thank you all for allowing me to come up here and share my little story with you. And I did get sober in California. I got sober in Whittier, California at Serenity Hall. And I'm excited about Serenity Hall. I'm excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I said, I did get sober in California, and I like to tell a little California story. I like to start out with a little story. And this newcomer was walking on the beach, and he had this ugly little dog with him, and he's throwing the stick and that kind of stuff for his little ugly dog. And a bottle washes up onto the sand, and the newcomer, he reaches down there and picks it up and pulls the cork off, and poof, the genie comes out. The genie says, "Newcomer, I'm going to give you one wish." Newcomer thinks a little bit. He says, "I want to take you to take this ugly little dog of mine, make him the prettiest and the smartest dog in the whole world, and we can become rich and famous and travel all over the world." So the genie says, "Man, that's an ugly dog." Genie says, "Hey, newcomer, you have another wish." Newcomer thinks. He says, "Yeah." He says, "I want to stay sober and not go to those AA meetings." Genie says, "Let's take another look at that dog." I think what the genie's saying is to stay sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, we need to go to meetings. We need to be a part of this deal, you know. Like I said, my home group is in California, and we kind of had a little tradition. You know how we get those guys and gals that go out, and then pretty soon they'll come back, and we called them scouts in California, you know. but we would ask them, and this is, my home group was a 6 a.m. meeting, and we would ask them, "What meetings are you going to?" I said, "Tell me, because I don't want to go to those meetings." And of course, obviously, I quit going to meetings. The second question it asked is, "Tell me what page you're reading in the big book, because I'm going to tear it out of my book." Well, I've never torn any pages out of my book, you know. But, you know, I think we stopped doing this deal before we stopped going to meetings. See, I think the new guys, the younger guys that they just, you know, we can stay sober on the fellowship for 90 days, you know, just by, wow, because, you know, everybody's loving us, and, you know, we've been out there in them trenches and doing what we do, and we come in here, and everybody's hugging us and kissing on us and, you know, and telling us that we're the most important people in the meeting, and we believe it, you know. Anyway, I think what happens is we just unplug, or we never did plug in. See, I think it's important that we take these newcomers and we make sure they have good sponsorship. Make sure that they start taking those steps, see, the steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's where it's at. I mean, that's what keeps us here for the longer time, you know. And anyway, that's enough of that. First drink, I remember I jumped in the back seat of this old Chevrolet, and back there in between there, and I started drinking this beer, and you know, the pimples fell off. I knew what to say and when to say it, and I was really like, I belonged. You know, I was a part of this thing, and all my life, I didn't think I, September, where's your sister? Okay. You know, all my life I was like less than, didn't belong to, and I don't know if I consciously, but inside, man, I wasn't too short, too ugly, too pimply, or anything else. And I don't know what happened that night, but I do remember laying on some grass, and this cold grass on my face. I remember the next morning I woke up, and I said, "What happened to my jacket?" And they says, "You heaved in it, and we threw it away." But I noticed that I wanted to do that again. I wanted to, I knew that, that whatever was in that was what my personality was missing. And I drank as much as I could, as often as I could. And when I graduated from high school, they had senior prophecies. And my senior prophecy was, Joe Windley will be a man of leisure while supporting Adolph Coors. And I was proud of that. I've shown everybody, I'm so proud of that. But you see, I drank different. I didn't know I drank different then. But this is my wife. Say hi to Gloria, my wife. My wife drove me up here. She's, you know, God bless her soul, you know. March will be 50 years this coming March that we've been, you know. Not my fault, you know. First 10 years, I don't know why. I'll tell you why she stayed. Number one, she had two kids. We were broker. We were renting a house for my dad. Hadn't paid no rent for over a year. And church was bringing food in, feeding us. And both her parents had passed away. So she had nowhere to go, you know. But anyway, I'm glad she stuck with me because I'm so proud of her and I love her so much, you know. Anyway, where was I? I was talking about, anyway. So I graduated from high school. I started in the car business, you know, and it was my wife's birthday, and we were having her parents over, and my parents over, and we had all the booze in the refrigerator, and this here badminton setting up in the backyard, and I'm supposed to get off at 3 o'clock in the afternoon from work, and a guy quits his job that morning, and he says, Joe, you take me home. I said, sure, I'll just drive you home, you know. So I drive him home, and we get to his apartment, and he says, Joe, come on up, I want to show you my apartment. I go up there to his apartment, and he pulls out a bottle of bourbon, full bottle, and some vodka, which was only about, that much in the vodka. He says, okay, Joe, you drink the vodka because you can't smell that and you got to go back to work, and he's going to drink some vodka and we're going to have a drink. Anyway, I drank all his vodka. I helped him finish off that bottle of bourbon. The next thing I remember, we're pulling out a warm case of beer out of his closet. And the next thing I remember, I'm driving home and it's daylight, it's morning. And I'm thinking, I missed my wife's birthday. One more time I've messed up. I said, how do you say, you know, and I've been saying, I'm sorry. How do you say you're sorry? You know, her cousin came. And so anyway, you know how you have those people you see around that I'm not going to AA, but there's this lady across the street from me, Marge, and I hated Marge's guts, and she hated my guts, and she never mowed her lawn, she never took her trash can in, she roamed up and down the street in moo-moo and flip-flops and drank too much and that, and then something happened to Marge, you know, she started taking her trash can in, started mowing her lawn, she wasn't roaming around, and people saying that Marge quit drinking, and something about a birthday, hadn't drank in a year, and they're going to have some celebration for her, something, she's going to AA, and, you know, and, I mean, I didn't want to go to AA, but I kind of knew that, you know, and people were pushing me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, see, I was working at this here Ford store, and they come around, and they paid on Friday, and this is before we had ATMs and that kind of thing, you see, and so they come to me and they said, Joe, we can't give you your check till the end of your shift, till you get done with shift, and then we'll give you your, because when we pay you, you don't come back. Well, you know, here we are, swear to God, I'll come back. I got to cash my check, it's Friday, and, you know, back then banks weren't open on Saturdays and no ATMs, but, you know, we can talk those people into, you know, because, see, with every fiber of my body, I knew I was going to go cash my check, not going to have a drink, and come right back. Swear to God. And I meant it with everything. Well, once I got that folding money in my pocket, I'm just going to have one, you know. 3 days later, he gets a hold of me and says, Joe, just bring your car back. Just bring your company car back, and we don't want you here anymore. You know. So anyway, I'm flopping. Man, the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous I go to is October of 73. My sobriety date is March of 75. So I start going to them meetings. The first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous I go to is a speaker's meeting. And I don't know what he said, and I don't know who he was, but I wanted to come back. I wanted to come to these meetings, but I still didn't want to quit drinking. You know, and I didn't quit drinking. I could get out of the house with the car and go to the meeting, and I liked the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember I was in a bar drinking one time, and there's some guy that was going to the same meetings or round I'd seen in AA. Me and him are sitting at the bar. We're telling each other how we can work this program and drink. We're telling that to each other, you know. But anyway, I'm going to them meetings and drinking before and after, between. And a couple times they called up and my wife and said, "Joe's up here, he's drunk, will you come get him?" And then, you know, then she'd come get me. And I remember her cousin came out from Oregon. And he goes to the store and he gets a quart of vodka and something else that you make Harvey Wallbangers. I don't know what that was. And he's there about 3 days, and of course I'm going AA, so I don't drink, you know. He drinks about that much out of the bottle in 3 days. So my wife, she works as an aide at the hospital. She's working the 11 to 7 shift, and I'm not even working, you know. And so I'm going to these meetings and that, and he leaves. Well, I'm sitting in this meeting, I'm thinking about that bottle of vodka on the counter out there. So on my way home, I stop and I get some grapefruit juice. And I pull in the driveway and I hide it in the bushes. So she goes off to work, 11 o'clock at night, she goes off to work. I go out and I get my grapefruit juice, and I go, now I put a thumb mark right on that bottle right where it is, because I know she's watching it, you know. So I pour me a drink, put that grapefruit in there, and then I put water in it right up to the mark, because I'm not going to have any more. I'm just going to have one, you know. Yeah. Yes. And so I sit down in my chair, and I got this drink, and I start, and it's good. I mean, it's good. The kids are in bed. She's gone. You know how they are. Yak, 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 you know. Just, I get done with that, and I think, you know something? I'm going to have one more. Oh, I go pour one more, and then I remember consciously thinking this, I'm not going to put water in it this time because I might want one more. I drank the whole bottle, put water in it right to the mark. The next morning, she's home. I'm thinking, man, I got a bottle of water sitting out there on the counter. I got to do something. So I tell her, I says, you know, that jug your cousin left behind is really starting to bother me. So I uncork it, and I'm pouring it down down the drain. She's patting me on the back. She says, I'm so proud of you. You're doing so good. Yeah, I didn't tell her about that. I was probably 3 or 4 years sober before I ever told her about that bottle, you know. And then, of course, I hadn't worked, and we were renting that house, and church bringing food in, and of course, church, one guy tried to take me to some pool hall beer bar thing to show me how we could play pool and not drink, and, you know, I hated his guts, and I didn't like anybody that tried to help me, you know. And my uncle, he had these styrofoam airplanes. He manufactured them and sold them in fairs. You've probably seen them all over the United States, some styrofoam things. So he decided he'd drag me off to some couple of them fairs so I could make a little money. And, you know, I don't know if he's going to keep me sober or babysit me or what. I don't think so. But anyway, he's a good man. Don't drink him. They were really good, good Christian people, you know. So I'm there about 2 or 3 days, and there's these here beer things all over the fairground. And we're in, like, San Bernardino. And so I'm one night I go there to eat my dinner. He gave me an hour for dinner. I go to one of them beer places, and This is my last drunk. This was the last time I drank. And I sat there and I drank my dinner. And I got back to the booth right an hour exactly, right on time. Except I wanted one more drink. Wanted one more, you know. And I says, I left my glasses. I left my glasses in where I was drinking. So I got to go back and get them. I went back there to get that one more. The next thing I remember is somebody's mopping up around me. I got that feeling, I got to go. I got to get out of here. You know? Then, and so I walked. I don't know where I went. I went around the back of some building, and there was a big trash bin. And I crawled behind the trash bin, and I'm laying down there, and my head's on the concrete, on that cold concrete. I'm in my cheek, and I'm laying there. And I pretty soon I got the feeling that I got to get out of here. And I wandered up to the freeway. We call them freeway. You guys call them interstates here. We called them freeways in California. And I got up there and I started hitchhiking. And these guys stopped and they said, "We're going to Redlands and or somewhere like that." And of course I'm going to Whittier the opposite way. And I says, "So I said, me too." And I jumped in the car. That would be like saying you'd be in Memphis and you got to get to Little Rock and they say they're going to Nashville. You know, it didn't matter. I had to get out. I just wanted out. I just wanted in something. I just, you know. Anyway, they got tired of me after a while. And they just dumped me out on the side of the highway, the freeway. And I'm laying in these bushes. And I've been going to AA for like a year and a half or more. And I'm laying in these bushes. And I got this head full of AA and this belly full of booze. And I'm thinking, you know, I got to start doing what the people in Alcoholics Anonymous are telling me that I need to do. I need to take the steps, you know, for me. And it don't matter about those two little girls and the parents I'm not paying rent to and the wife. And because if I don't do this, this is the way my life is going to be. And I called my wife and she come and got me. And I remember the next morning, this house we were renting from my dad, living in, had a little breakfast bar area there. And I remember sitting there and telling my wife that I'm going to go to meetings for Alcoholics Anonymous 90 days, in 90 meetings, 90 days. And I'm going to get a sponsor, and I'm going to take the steps, and I'm going to do this deal. And of course, I'm sure I'd told her that before. But the difference between us is I'm headed off to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous for sobriety. First time that I ever went to a meeting for sobriety. I went there for me, not to make somebody else happy. And I remember when I was sober a week. I was sober 7 days. I remember I was sober Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I thought, my gosh, someone like me could stay sober a whole week? Every day of the week I had been sober. A miracle. And then I hadn't worked. I'm going to these meetings. I'm doing this stuff. And then you know, there's little God shots come along. I call them God shots. Things happen. This lady, her name was Maggie. She come up to me because I was a car salesman. And Maggie come up and she says, "Joe, Toyota's got a little car that's just selling like hotcakes." This is 1975. And so she says, and so I went down to the Toyota dealer and got hired on as a salesman. And there's not much going on in 1975 in a Toyota dealer, but I started selling a few of these little cars, and I remember I got my first paycheck. I hadn't had a paycheck in a long time, you know. I mean, in 1974, when everybody's getting their W-2s, no one sent me one. Nobody sent me a W-2, you know. Didn't have failed taxes. So anyway, I got this check, and they took taxes out. I said, man, it felt so good. It felt so good. I'm going to meetings. I'm paying taxes, you know. And I felt like a citizen. I'm proud of myself. But anyway, these cars aren't selling so good. I mean, there's nothing that's selling like hotcakes. And about a month or so later, you know, and of course, the manager, he liked to close right around 8 o'clock, and the meetings at Serenity Hall started at 8:30, and I could zoom, get out to get to my meeting at Serenity Hall, and then I could get home and go, I could go work at the hospital at the 11, you know, and I'm going to meetings and selling cars, and then I see Maggie again. I say, "Maggie, which one of them little Toyotas is selling like hotcakes?" She says, "Oh, Joe, I made a mistake. It's the Datsun B210, you know?" She didn't make a mistake. You see, Datsun dealer down the street, which is Nissan now, the Datsun dealer was staying open until 9 o'clock. I wouldn't be able to get to my meeting. The Datsun dealer, yeah, was doing. But then I'm at the Toyota dealer, and I'm selling these cars, and boss likes me and all, and just, you know, and I'm, we, and so I'm probably there 2-3 months, and so I'm going to, we're going to go on a trip, you know. I'm going to, me and my wife and my two kids, we're going to go down to San Diego and to wherever you go in San Diego. And I remember we went down there and got in this here resort thing, and I'm sober about 2 months, maybe, and we're in there, and man, we're by the pool, and these girls are serving drinks in the pool, around the pool, and I walk, and there's this package store, and we eat lunch out by where the golfers are making their turn, and there's golfers in there making a turn, drinking beer, and I go into this one little bar thing to get us some drinks, and there's like mermaids swimming behind the bar, and, you know, and that, and what's about time? About time for us to eat dinner, and we're back there getting it, and man, I want a drink. I mean, I'm irritable, restless, I'm miserable, and I'm making them miserable, and finally my wife said, "Just go drink." And so I climb out of there, I go and I'm looking, I go out there by the pool, nobody's, the pool thing shut down, the bar by the pool shut down, the golf thing shut down, go, the package store's closed. There's no place in this place to buy a drink. I couldn't get a drink. So I stomped back to the room, and I don't remember what happened after that, but anyway, I didn't drink, not my fault, you know. Anyway, the miracle was is that, see, Maggie, that was a God shot, put me where I needed to be. I got back to my meetings, going to my meetings. Now Toyota comes out with a little liftback car that starts selling like crazy, and they rounded off them trucks. Toyota had them square, ugly little trucks, and they rounded the fenders off and made them look pretty good, and they were selling, and I'm doing good, and so the owner, now he makes me the manager, and I'm going to my meetings, and I'm a manager at the Toyota dealer, and I'm going home, and it's just rah, rah, rah at home, you know, and so I decided that my wife didn't need deserve me anymore, so I'm going to leave her. So I leave my wife. I leave her. And, you know, I'm gone for a little while, not too long. I'm gone. And my sponsor comes to me and he says, "Joe," he says, "you're a good little AA guy running around the AA room doing what AA guys do." And he says, you're a good employee. Your boss likes you. Your customers like you. You're doing a good job. He says, "You know, we practice these principles in all of our affairs. You know, we work Alcoholics Anonymous everywhere." He says, "Why don't you treat your wife like you'd treat one of your AA buddies? Why don't you give her the same patience and tolerance you would give a newcomer?" And so I started treating her like an AA buddy, give her that thing, and she straightened right up. Yeah, and you know, but I found out in everything in my life, if I, like waiting in line at the market, If I just give the same tolerance and patience I give an AA buddy in line or driving or doing, I'm better. My daughters one time, they were, I remember my daughter, she was like, we lived in this little condo and was halfway up the stairs, and she made a comment. She says, "It's amazing how much better we act when you go to meetings." The whole world acts better when I go to meetings. Anyway, so me and my wife are back together, and you know, and the Toyotas are selling like crazy, and things are getting good. So and I'm going to my meetings and that, and we go and we buy a house about 16 miles away in Yorba Linda, California, and we buy this big house on the corner, anyway. And so, you know, and I'm going to the meetings, and so I go to the meetings in Yorba Linda, walk into a meeting in Yorba Linda, and they didn't know who I was. I'm sober about 7 or 8 years at this time. They don't know who I am, 6, 7 years. And you know how clicky AAs are, you know, the little groups going in there, and I'm looking at them, and They didn't even do the meeting right. They didn't do it like they did. I guess so. I didn't like them meetings. So I'm trying to go to meetings in Whittier, and then it got to where, we were staying open till 9 o'clock now, and so I just kind of like stopped going to meetings. Didn't go. Man, somebody go out, or somebody's husband or something. I'd take them to a meeting or birthday, and then it got to where I wasn't going to meetings. So then that guy who run that Toyota dealer, he didn't deserve me anymore. So I quit the Toyota dealer, went to selling high mileage used cars to high mileage people in a high mileage neighborhood. And so I was down there, and we got, we'll have that buddy that we got sober with, that there's somebody got sober same time we did, and my guy's name was Ron. And Ron, things got good for Ron. Ron got sober and bought a cabin up in the Sierras and some stuff. And Ron stopped going to meetings. And I'd heard Ron, I know Ron started drinking a little bit again. And he'd stop by the used car lot once in a while. And he'd have six-pack or something in the seat of the car. And anyway, I became an Angel fan. Not that Angel, but Angel baseball player. I'm just into these Angels, and I know I read the sports page front to back every morning, and I even knew their wife's names and their wife's birthdays, the players. So the Angels were, all I had to do was win one more game and they're going to the World Series. I don't remember what year it was, but and I haven't been going to meetings, and I get up in the morning and I mow my lawn. I got the lines going perfect in the lawn and hose down the walkways and everything like that. And it's about time for the baseball game to start, and I will come in, and my daughter's sitting on the couch with her boyfriend and got some soap opera on there. And I says, "Aren't you guys going to watch the baseball game?" My daughter looks at me and says, "We don't like baseball." I says, "Gosh darn, I'm the only one that does anything around here. The breakfast dishes aren't even done. There's nothing. I'm the only one." And I stomp upstairs. And I said, I'm going to go down to the Mexican food place. I got a big screen TV. I'm going to watch baseball and drink beer. I'm on my way. I get in the car and I'm on my way. All of a sudden, I'm looking, man, I got this dirty, sweaty old hat on and mow and working the yard in. I don't look good. Then I even know who I am when I get there. So I'm going to turn around, I'm going to shower, get dressed up nice, then go watch the baseball game. I turn around, I come walk in the house. My daughter's got the baseball game. She says, "There you go, baby. You can watch your game." I don't know what happened, but I stayed home. Okay. Now, that night, I get a call from Ron up in the Sierras from his cabin. Ron says, "I need help." He says, "Joe, come get me. I need help." Now, next morning, I jump in my car and I drive up the stairs about 300 miles up there to his cabin. Go up there and I walk in Ron's cabin, and it stunk. And I found an old ski suit, the only thing that he hadn't messed in. And I put it on him. I put him on this ski suit. I go to a liquor store. I put him in the back seat of the car. I go to the liquor store and give him a little half pint for a ride down the hill. And I got Ron in the back seat of my car there. And Ron wasn't going to meetings, and I haven't been going to meetings. And I'm going down to him. I said, "The only difference between me and Ron is he took that first drink." See, Ron hasn't, and I almost took that first drink yesterday. I almost drank yesterday. I knew I had to get plugged into Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew that I couldn't do that. I didn't even know where I was going to do with Ron. I took Ron home, put him in the bedroom. He slept for 3 or 4 days back there. I had him in the bathroom there and shaving him, and he's arguing with me. So I went down to, in Fullerton had this little Alano club, and I'm sitting on the couch, and some guy says, "Hey, there's a guy started a brand new meeting at 6 a.m. in the morning right over by where you live at the bank building." So I said, "Okay." So the next morning, I go to the meeting. I walk in, and here it is. It's a guy that moved into my neighborhood just down the street about 2 weeks ago. He just bought a house and moved into my neighborhood. I said, "Wow." And so anyway, that he says, "I started this 6 a.m. meeting. It's an attitude modification meeting." He says, "Because it works for my schedule." He says, "I'm in sales, and I can start my day this way." And And that works good for me too, you know, because I work till 8, 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night, so I can, yeah. So I start going to this meeting. And now in that morning meeting, they'd read the third step prayer, seventh step prayer, prayer of St. Francis, and pages, what, 86, 80, on awakening, let us think about the, you know, too much praying, you know. I try to get it changed. I said, listen, a meeting is little chapter three, little, you know, the traditions, little chapter five maybe, and then let's get on and let's just talk, share. Well, they wouldn't let me chat. There's probably three or four people going to the meeting that time, and it just started. He said, no. He says, this is a meeting designed for alcoholics to start their day on a spiritual note. He says, that's what I did. This is like 11-step meeting or something for us to start. So anyway, I started going there every morning. I started reading those prayers, and I started, you know, doing that and got back plugged into Alcoholics Anonymous. Never want to be where I was before, you know. And I've stayed close to AA ever since. Now, I was sober about 10 years. And I get a call. And of course, you know how you want to sober everybody up when you come in here? You know, I wanted to sober my dad up. I wanted to get him into AA. He certainly needed Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'd kind of given up on him. And I'm sober about 10 years. And my dad's boss calls me and says, Joe, your dad was at his desk. And he was just gripping his desk and just kind of staring out. Paramedics come, picked him up, and took him to some hospital. So me and my wife jump in the car, and we head to the hospital. And I go into the hospital room there. My dad laying there on the bed, and his eyes are open, you know, and just staring through me. It's, you know, lights on, nobody home. And I'm looking at my dad, and I can't even remember the last time I told my dad I loved him. I said, Dad. And it's just like, and so my wife and I, we start telling the doctor how much my dad drinks. I mean, that he's, you know, abuses alcohol. Well, something happened. My dad just kind of came out of this thing, like, 7 days, and he just kind of like, and he was nothing, he was just kind of normal, you know. Now, except the doctor tells him what me and my wife said, and oh, he was mad. You know, why would you tell my doctor? But he agreed that he'd go to this 30-day program over at the Brea Psych Ward, you know, and they'd just put the drunks in the nut houses then, you know, with the wackos. And so I go into my morning meeting, some of my buddies, I said, go over there, see my dad, he's in Brass Psych Unit, go talk to my dad and, you know, talk AA and that. And so a couple of them went and they came back and they said, Joe, your dad's just as proud of you as he can be, but he still thinks he can bring a little wine with dinner, he's just not ready, you know, and so I'm upset. Next thing I know, my dad's home. He didn't even wrinkle the sheets. And I call my mother up, and I said, don't you ever call me complain about his drinking. Why'd you let him go? I mean, I was beating my mother up on the phone, and I was so disappointed. And she says, whoa, wait a minute. She says, your dad promised that he would go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with you. No, well, that didn't impress me too much. Thanksgiving morning, 1985, I drive from Yorba Linda to Whittier, get my dad, take him to the 6 a.m. meeting on Thanksgiving. And we, in that meeting, we go around the room, we introduce ourselves. And they came to my dad, and he says, my name's Fred, and I'm an alcoholic. And there was something heavy in that room. I all of us who were there felt this, I mean, it was like, it was heavy. And my dad left that meeting, he wanted to come back. And then he told me, he says, Joe, he says, you know, the obsession to drink was lifted from me right there in that meeting. And of course, now, I understand that there's two types of spiritual experiences that they talk about in the big book, one like Bill had where you lie or whatever, you know, and then as a result of these steps, I've had a spiritual experience, rearrangement the way I think, you understand? I understand that. But I don't ever did understand the other thing. I didn't even know if I even believed the other thing. But see, I do believe it because that happened to my dad. My dad left there, got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then he retired, and then he started working at, you guys call it Intergroup, we called it Central Office, and started working there a couple days a week, selling chips and giving away chips, And I had a Monday night meeting that I was, we call them secretaries, of this Monday night meeting. And every once in a while, he'd show up at that Monday night meeting with a newcomer that he had got pulled out of somewhere, out of something, and he'd bring him in. And then we'd end up going to a Sunday night meeting. We'd kind of meet halfway, this here fireside meeting that was in Buena Park. We'd go to that meeting, and my dad and I, and I got to talk to my dad. I got to tell him I loved him, and he loved me, and we got to share all this stuff. And my dad told me things that I didn't even think he had those feelings or thoughts or anything. Then I came to Tennessee in July of 95. Yeah, July, the end of July, 1st of July of 95, and started working. And I flew back to California on Thanksgiving to give my dad his 10-year medallion in that morning meeting. And every year in Thanksgiving, we would share about that and talk about that spiritual experience. And in that meeting, my dad would celebrate his birthday on Thanksgiving morning. Then I come back, and in February they call me and says, "Joe, your dad's really not doing good. Your dad's not going to be with us." And so I went home, and I got there, and my dad was really sick. He passed away just right after I got home there. I got to see him just before he passed away. And then in the funeral home, and my dad was laying in his casket, and I was looking at my dad, and I knew my dad loved me. Better yet, I knew my dad knew I loved him. And there was nothing that needed to be said between me and my father. It, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a relationship with my dad, and I was okay. I was okay. If I got nothing out of AA at that, I'd be more than paid. Yeah. Anyway, I come back here, and there's some guys. I'd shared the story about my dad and that. They started at my home group Primary Purpose every Thanksgiving at 6 a.m. We have that morning meeting and read that floor mat and do that, and we do that kind of thing. So that's pretty cool. You know? When I came from California, Yorba Linda, to Memphis, I knew you guys weren't going to do it right. So I knew I wouldn't be able to change it. Now, I remember I went into the meeting, in the Primary Purpose group, I went into the meeting, and they asked for newcomers, you know. But just right after they asked for newcomers, then I just said, and I was sober 20 years at the time. I said, "My name's Joe, and I'm an alcoholic. I just moved here from California, and I need some friends." Well, this big old guy by the name of Alan, and he had long hair, black leather jacket, because I'm working at a new car dealer, and I look like this. I'm dressed these in my work clothes. And he comes up having a meeting. He says, "I'll be your friend," and gives me a big old hug and that kind of thing, you know. So anyway, he says, "Hey, Wednesday night I'm going out to some recovery place. You want to go?" And I says, "You bet, I want to go." So I swung by his house, picked him up, and we started going on that regular time, and Alan started taking me around these places and introduced me into the AA community and introduced me to some friends, and I got involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous here because I knew what happened when I didn't, and I didn't want that to happen. I remember I went into this. You know, there's a lot of them like God shots. You know, like when I. You know, when I was, I'd go there and I was just going to take one drink out of the bottle, and they were telling me in AA that, see, it's the first drink that got me drunk. They were telling me that I was a pickle, that I used to be a cucumber. They're telling me nobody ever got run over by a caboose, you know, and I knew all that stuff here, but it took what it took to get it, you know, here. I was in a restaurant, and this gal was sitting there, hanging there, and her keys are hanging off of her thing, and then she got a medallion, and I don't remember, 9, 10 years on that thing or something like that. And I'm with a guy that's not on the program, and we're waiting, and I look at her, and I says, you've been going to them damn meetings a long time, haven't you? She looks at me, and I pull my chip out, and I show it to her. She grabs me. We're jumping up and down. We're hugging each other, and you know, and so we get our food, and the guy says, who is that? You know, I said, that's the first time I saw her. Yeah, but that's the way we are. We got that language of heart. You were sharing it last night. You were sharing, talking about that. And I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous, if I'm in tune, the right thing happens. If I'm in tune, I get what I need. I had this guy that I sponsor, and he was sponsoring this guy, and it was some holiday. And the guy was in the emergency room, so he calls me up. He says, Joe, will you come down to the hospital with me? And this guy's in the emergency room, and he's not feeling, you know, he's whatever he's doing in there. So sure, I'll go with you. So I went down there, and of course, this guy's on the gurney sitting there, and he's pounding his fists, making his demands. You know how we are, demanding what. And I started laughing at him. I'm laughing at him. And he looked at me, he says, who are you? He says, you laugh too much. Yeah. Then next day I'm at my morning meeting, and some guy says that I'm not a good sponsor because I'm not serious, and that I don't take the program serious. And I said, my gosh. And that kind of hurt my feelings. And I went home, and my wife was in school, going to college, and she's studying at the table. And I come down, I go in there, and I try and pinch her on the boob, you know. And she says, what, aren't you always gonna play, don't you ever, just your, don't, you know. I said, well, that was kind of sexy. No. And so I'm going to work. I'm suicidal. Nobody likes me. I'm not serious. I'm not a good sponsor. You know, so I go to this Friday night meeting, and this gal's taking she's a guest speaker, she's taking a 25-year chip, Phyllis, and so she gets ready to do her pitch, she says, oh, there's a friend of mine, I've known him since he got sober, you know, Joe, come up here, Joe, and I think she wants me to split a pitch with her, you know, and so she's going up there, and she pulls this paper bag out. She says, Joe, put your hand in there. So I put my hand, she holds it around me. She says, okay, Joe, do it. I says, Phyllis, I don't know, what am I supposed to do? She says, I knew if I ever got you in the sack, you wouldn't know what to do. Everybody laughed. I started laughing. Then she started talking about the belly laugh we have in Alcoholics Anonymous and how we can, you know, all that stuff, then I sat down, and I knew I was okay. I knew I was in the right spot, and I've had those God shots. Man, my wife and I both quit our jobs, and we were selling those styrofoam things. I'm sober now about 10 years, and we're in, like, Minnesota, and so we got our booth all set up, and I tell my wife I can go to the restroom, and the close restroom's this way, but I go this way, because I'm just kind of nosy. And I see this AA booth. And we'd been out several different little fairs selling this junk. So I go up there, and man, I see all this AA literature, and I haven't been to a meeting in a couple weeks, and that. And this gal's name is Claire. And she introduced me, and I say, oh, you know, glad you guys are here, and I'm glad to see this. And, you know, anyway, I go to the bathroom, I come back, tell my wife there's an AA deal down there. And next thing you know, every time they'd change shifts, somebody come by from that thing. She put a note in there, says, go see Joe in the airplane booth. He's from California and lonesome. And they'd come by, and I could tell whoever, when they come up to there, I could tell the difference between somebody wanting to buy or do or something. And you know, and we'd have this one guy gave me a little penny that he run through some smasher that had the Serenity Prayer on it. And another guy gave me a hat with a camel on it. And then one night, my wife let me go with a bunch of the guys. There's several guys, about five or six of these guys. We all went out there where the carnies are in the midway and throwing dimes and just acting like kids and having a ball, you know. And it just, I think those things may have happened when I was sober, but I didn't act or react or didn't know about it, you know. We were in Wisconsin, and we're in there eating, and it's late, and here come all these people in. They start moving tables around, and they're doing some stuff, and they're noisy and taking over this restaurant. And I says to my wife, I says, I'll bet they're AAs. Pretty soon I hear somebody say he's sicker than someone else. I says, yeah, I knew it. And so I introduced myself. Next thing you know, we're sitting at the table with them. And we're having a meeting right there in this restaurant, and with these people I didn't know, and you know, and it's just been over and over those kinds of things for me. And I want to talk a little bit about the steps. Do I have time? I like to talk about this. Now, my wife learned this when she used to go to Al-Anon. She come back and shared this with me in my early sobriety. That if we don't agree on something, we don't have to hate each other's guts. And if you don't agree with what I have, you don't have to hate me, okay? But I believe the first three steps, I can't, he can, I'll let him, are merely decisions. I don't believe there's a spiritual experience in the first three steps. I also believe that the first step is not taken in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's taken out there. See, I run across some people and they say, well, Sponsor, you write on the first step and you take one step a month and that. My God, I ask, how many people have you killed? You know, see, my big book says that if you're not fully convinced that you're alcoholic, go out and try it, drink some more. It says try it more than once. See, so I think find out if you're alcoholic, you have to drink. You have to go out there and drink. Because you ain't going to let us drink in here. Can't come in here and drink. You can come here drunk, but you can't drink here. So I think I took my first step laying along the freeway there in California in the bushes. See, I think that's where I admitted to my most inner self that I was powerless over alcohol. I think that's where I really, really took that step. And I think I might have taken the second. Believe that, you know, something could restore me to sanity, power grain myself. See, and I also think that a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous don't even know what the insanity the book's talking about. See, I was at this here recovery house or something, and this young fella, he's talking about how he ripped the dope dealer off, and the guy's coming through the window, and he was on the third story, jumped out of the window, got to the next building and ran away. And he said, man, that's crazy, that's insanity. I said, no, that's not insanity, that's not crazy, that's a symptom of our disease. See, I think spending your paycheck, not coming home, beating up Sweetie Pie, I never beat up Sweetie Pie, and doing those kind of things are symptoms. Now, I think the insanity is the thought that I can take one. That I think the insanity is to think that I can take one, put water up to the line, and that's all I'm going to have. See? I think the insanity is that I can be out in the country, eat a sandwich, glass of milk, and order another sandwich, another glass of milk, and put some whiskey in it. Didn't say that old car salesman in the big book? Off to another nut house. See, I think the insanity they're talking about in the second step is that first drink. I believe that I'm not going to drink, you know. And then the third is a decision. The third's only a decision. I think it's like a phone call. See, I think I'm probably the best fisherman in Tennessee, you know. And I call Milton and I say, Milton, would you like to go fishing? And of course, Milton, everybody wants to go fishing with me because I'm such a good fisherman. And so he says, absolutely. I said, I'll pick you up at 6 a.m., be ready. So Milton goes, gets all his fishing gear, his tackle box, everything. He's got it set by the front door because he made a decision to go fishing with me. Let's have a fish fry. There ain't no fish. All we did is make a decision to go fishing. See? And I think that's what the third step is. God, I offer myself to thee. You're calling up, hey, I'm going to do the deal. Relieve me of the bondage of self. See, and I think we immediately need to get into to the inventory and the other steps. See, I believe that the third step and the 11th step are basically the same step. One's the decision and one's the action. I also think the last three is where we live after we've done. We got to do the inventory. We got to clean up the wreckage of the past. We got to do that crap. You know, you got to do that for the long term. Last three. Me, God, and you. Me, keep my side of the street clean. 10th step. God, stay hooked and plugged into God. And you, don't mess with you. Practice these principles in all our affairs. You know, we all think 12th step is just running out carrying that message, you know, bringing in. 12th step is sometimes the message is just the way we act. I was working at Bud Davis, and there was this guy, and he just couldn't stay sober. And I every morning I always get me a breakfast sandwich and some orange juice. I always start my day at my desk drinking, you know, not drinking, drinking more breakfast, and And he come in not feeling good, and he really didn't like me, you know. And I said to him, and I don't even remember saying this to him, but he said, I said, you don't have to live that way. Now, he got sober. I had nothing to do with it. He got sober, but he's come to me, and he says, Joe, he says, you remember when you told me I didn't have to live that way? He says, I used to see you come in, and I knew you were on the program. He says, and you went home, and you didn't have all the drama in your life that I have. He says, and he thanked me. See, so we don't know. You know, I was his Dorothy. I was the moo-moo and the flip-flop lady. You know, so you don't know. The new guy can do the 10th. Even the guy that comes brand new in the program can actually take his inventory and promptly admit when he's wrong. And I'm going to tell you why I think that. Because if the new guy comes in and he makes me mad, and I say, hey, man, you owe me apologies. You need to make amends for that. And he goes, whoa, hold on. I'm only on step three. I don't have to say nothing to you until I get, when I get to 8, I'll write you down. When I get to 9, I'll come back and tell you whatever I'm going to tell you. But right now, screw you. I'm not there yet. See, so I think the new guy can do that. I think the new guy can improve his conscious contact with God. See, my 11th step prayer when I first got sober and got that little job selling Toyotas, when I made that U-turn getting into the lot, was, God, don't let me get into anything you can't get me out of. That was my morning meditation, my morning prayer, and it kind of worked. And I think the new guy can even carry this message. Because the new guy in here the new guy comes in here and sits down, and he sits next to me. And I say, hey, kid, I've been here 39 years, it's going to get better, you know. I'm not even an alcoholic as far as you're concerned. But yet, he sits next to the guy that's got 7 days. You know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, he sits next to that guy. And the guy said, man, I've been sober a week. You know, these aren't bad people. This is pretty good. He's thinking, wow, I can stay sober a week. See, so I think the new guy can help that guy. I don't think the new guy needs to sponsor that guy. But I think they can do it. I don't think we need to give him our keys. Yeah. They say that the newcomer is the lifeblood of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I believe that. But I also believe the old-timer is the backbone of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think it's our responsibility as people have been around a while to keep this thing the way it is and to keep it simple. You know, we don't need to, you know, do that thing. I'm grateful to be here. I want to thank you for inviting me to share, and I've had a great time this weekend. Thank you.